You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot. I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out in the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his cypress knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Where the party gonna hell? Out in the St. John's Swamps.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Viscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Viscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Top drawer, young man, top drawer. I'm feeling like $1 million. I'm surrounded by the best of the best in the industry, folks. We're up here in this humble little town called Deering, New Hampshire. I got to tell you, I didn't know that people still live the way they do up in this area, but it is a dream come true for those of you who love firearms, okay, whether they're long rifles or sidearms. You just come out here, you sit at your porch, and you just start shooting. And your neighbors get pissed off because you didn't invite them. So it's something else, I got to tell you. But we happen to be up here on the invitation by a good fellow Paisan. And as you know, we've been, for the last 6 weeks, checking this situation out. Good old Scott Lucas. And his hospitality has been really, really great, folks, I got to tell you. And along with us tonight, we've got the A-team. I call it the A-team. We got TJ, who's leading the pack. We got Tim McMillan. We got Jimmy Snell, folks. Yes, we got the ex-Marine. Mr. Sniper himself is with us, along with Rex Abishell. And you're not going to believe this, Michael Green, the former guy that used to be and wrote the book, Sasquatch for Sale, used to be with the BFRO is with the real team now. As a matter of fact, I got to tell you a quick story before I go on. He got a little fatigued, folks. He said, shit. He says, I didn't know that you guys really get out in the field. When the BFRO, all we do is go around driving in cars and getting stoned and going out and eating pizza.
Nice. Nice.
And along with us, ladies and gentlemen, we have I like him. His name is Nicky. I thought he was Italian, but he doesn't know what he is. But he's a good guy. I like him a lot. He's with the Concord
Monitor,
okay? And he's been with us all afternoon, actually, since 5 o'clock. Gotten to know him. He's gotten to know us. And the whole team, ladies and gentlemen, they've already baited the area. They've already staked it out. They surveilled it earlier. I'm going to be up here on top doing the show with you and our host, Mr. Scott Lucas.
Hello.
But before we get into this, I want everybody to say hello because it's been so long, guys, since we've all been together like this. And I would be amiss for not having these guys come along and say hi. Jimmy Snell, say hello to everybody out there.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Marco. How's it going?
Marco, you're not on the juice again, are you?
Oh. Uh-oh. Well, hey, good evening, everybody. It's great to be back with the team. I'm looking forward to getting back out in the woods here pretty soon.
Good.
All right, Rex.
Hey. Hello, everyone. And here we are in New Hampshire. We're so glad the Searching for Bigfoot team has finally come to New Hampshire.
Michael?
Rocky, if you're listening, eat your heart out, and I hope you get to join us soon because you're really missing the best time we could be possibly having.
Jimmy?
Bigfoot's out there, and we're going to get him.
Say hello to everybody out there, would you, Nicky?
Hello, everybody out there. Hoping we find Bigfoot tonight.
Okay. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, here's our host.
Hi, this is Scott. I'm letting them use the farm. I'd like to thank you on behalf of myself and everyone on the team, and I hope we pass the audition.
Okay. Without a doubt. It was kind of nice. So at this point in time, guys, I want to release them. They're under the cover of darkness, a no-lights ordinance. And they're going to go see what they got out there, okay? And we'll call you back in about 5 minutes, Marco.
Well, Tom said he would call back in about 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, we lost him. you know, while we're waiting, why don't you tell us what you've been up to?
Actually, I haven't been up to a whole lot other than just I've had people. Since Tom sent me some business cards, and I've got them up in some strategic places, and I've had a number of phone calls, folks that have seen stuff and all that. Unfortunately, it's all stuff that happened back when, and nothing that can really be checked because, you know, what happened 2 years ago doesn't leave a lot of prints after all this time.
Yeah.
But
are you done moving?
What?
Did you get done moving again?
Oh gosh, no. We're still working on getting the house ready and all that. I've got I've already got my gun room all packed up and a bunch of it in storage, and of course I'm going into withdrawal, not having all my loading stuff around me. But no, we're getting closer. But my wife is down at her mother's in Hot Springs right now. She had a heart attack, so my wife's down there taking care of her. And when she gets back, then I'm going to start in on her about cutting me loose so I can join up with Tom and the boys.
Well, that'd be nice.
Oh yeah, I'm chomping at the bit, so I'm ready.
Have you heard from Sweet here recently?
With Swede? Yeah, I just got off the phone with him.
How's he doing?
Yeah. He's doing well. He's trying to, he's finally got all of his moving and building and all that done. So he's about ready for me and him to go hit the woods. And I told him that just as soon as I was able to go hit the woods that I was going to, I got the approximate schedule from Sarah so that I can catch the boy somewhere on the road.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that I'm actually going to try and, if everything works out, I'm going to try to catch him over around Kentucky.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe get to see Doyle again.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, yeah. Tom's back.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hey, Rocky, how are you?
I'm doing really good.
Did you guys hear all the guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
You bet.
They all said hello to you, Rocky. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard. I heard Tom Green trying to make me jealous.
Yeah, that was Michael Green. Yeah.
That's what I meant, Michael Green. Tom Green's a Canadian comedian. Sorry, man.
Okay. I got to tell you, they're out here on a mile square of 100 acres on this guy's property. And wow, you have no clue. Just Rocky, like I said at the beginning of the opening hour, that I've never seen anything like this, that this is the only state. I mean, I'm thinking about moving here. I swear to God. In the morning, they just get out, same thing over at Jimmy's house. You know, they get outside on their porch, they have their coffee, and they've got these targets. And here we are shooting. And then the neighbor, a mile down the road, come in and says, hey, man, how come you didn't invite me to shoot? I just blew us away, man. I couldn't believe it.
We got a lot of places like that around here. We just, man's just got to be there at the right time. I know a lot of people that have lots and lots of firearms, but they're not letting anybody else know.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you a story. You know, we had Scott on the show before, and he told some of the actions that went on here. But there's some other stuff that he has not told, which I'm hoping that he'll open up to our listeners around the globe, because he and I are up at the command post, and everybody else, which you heard was here, and there's Rex, and there's Jimmy Snell, and there's Michael, and there's TJ, and there's Tim McMillan, and the reporter. And these guys, it's a no-lights ordinance tonight, and they all got the infrared and the FLIR on them, and they're loaded for bear, folks. So we're beaming up to the satellites, and the Martians are sending things down to the Bigfoot. Tonight, because the A-team's got boots on the ground and they're looking for your ass. I got to tell you, and it's been phenomenal. Okay, you guys have no idea. Okay, I mean, even Scott Lucas, he just, wow, man, you guys are for real. You're not like that Finding Bigfoot show people that were here. They all went out and got stoned. Collaborate on that. Yeah, they're all high. And I said, my wife's here, I would. it's just an incredible situation. And apparently we're going to hit the front pages of the newspapers. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow because they'll be out all night long. We are a three-hour difference in time, folks. But you're hearing it. This is another first on live expedition. I've got the walkie set right next to me. So if we hear any shots or hear anything that's going on, they'll radio to me and let me know what's going on here. I just wish you guys were here, and I think that they're going to be filming some of this down there somehow. And I think Marco Bill and Michael Green have come up with a way of doing this. Did you, Marco?
Yeah, I got to talk to Michael, but we got a way of downloading it and everything, yeah.
Okay, because I want our listeners around the globe to see this. I especially want to see how, you know, Scott, he lives, he's one of us. I mean, he's one of us. He's one of our team, okay? It's just phenomenal. He's got a wonderful family. The way they live up here is just phenomenal. And I can't believe it. I met his son today. His son lives 2 hours from here. What's the name of the town?
Whitefield.
Whitefield, okay. He's on nine acres plus a 4,000-square-foot mansion, beautiful home, and a barn. And he told me he paid $56,000 for the whole thing. Think about that, folks. Yeah, 56,000, 9 acres, 4,000-square-foot mansion and a barn. Hard to take, folks.
Butler's quarters.
Oh, Butler's quarters. Yeah, I forgot about that. Butler's quarters. And the same thing over at Jimmy's. We stayed at Jimmy's place last night. And, oh, my God, these people are living like, you know, they're living the dream. And it blows my mind. And here, I'm going to tell you something. It gets hot during the day. Got up to almost 100 today, folks. But I didn't think it was humidity. He said it was humidity. Then around 5 o'clock, the wind comes in, and my God, just blows everything out. Marco, I'm telling you, this is real heaven up here. So I think what we might do now, we may buy a place up here for our northeast command post. And... So all of you squatchers out there that come up this way, you'll have a place to stay. And
that'd be
people,
nice.
Oh, yeah. They're so cordial. And I'm just shocked to see what there's no gun laws here.
No.
I was shocked. I swear to God. Yeah. I mean, and guess what? You don't have to worry about getting mugged or killed here because somebody will pull a gun before you put on. You know, or if you pull a .22 and say, give me your money, they got a .357 in their back pocket saying, well, let's see, let's play if you want to play.
Nice.
Unbelievable, you know. So why don't we do this, Scott? Why don't you tell them the story about the box and the pizza and the one about your brother, Jimmy, around the barn. Let's start off with the one with the barn here. You hold this and just talk to him.
Okay.
Talk to me.
This was two Christmases ago. We're at the farm, the classic horses, goats, everything. And we happened to be looking out the window in the corral, and all the animals are looking behind the barn, which they never do. No, the animals never look all together. So my brother goes, let's go out and see what it is. He goes around the corner, and I have two big black dogs, and they aren't afraid of anything. He went around the back of the barn, and we hear this deep, deep growl. And it stood up. And it was black, and it was, you know, it was a Bigfoot. And it just growled at us. Remember, his hands were longer past his knees. And he was 8 feet tall, 700 pounds. As soon as we pulled the gun up, as soon as he saw the gun, he growled at us and then ran. And we felt pretty brave, and then we took off after him. But we couldn't walk through the brush. It was just that, you know, it was crazy. And we saw it. It was a big, black Bigfoot. And it was right here in Deering, New Hampshire. And another one I got, this is a few years ago. We're trying to figure out, me and the kids, because we're into it, how to outwit this boy. Because if you leave some food out, the coyotes, the bears, they'll just rip it apart. We're trying to figure out, how can we trick them? So the kids came up, we make a box, a regular cardboard box, and I put three pieces of pizza in it, and I put it out in the stump about a quarter mile from the farm, and I folded it like you fold the box, 1, 2, 3, 4. And I left it there for like 2 days. And you figure if a bear or coyotes or wolves, if they get, they're going to rip it apart. We went there two days later, and the box was folded on the stump. and there was no pizza in it. And they had left three pizza-shaped rocks, which Tom has, and I'm giving him one to put in his souvenir collection. Now, what would do that? And I did. We were like, wow, this is crazy. And I'm in the woods, too. There wasn't another house for miles. Closed the box. And then this is very recently. I don't know. I was on Channel 9 in Concord, New Hampshire, and we were all down filming, and I have my black dogs, and they're so fast that I can't throw a stick anymore. I end up hitting them. So I throw a tennis ball, and I've been doing this for months, and I feel that something in the woods is watching me. So anyways, we're down with Channel 9. We're in the woods. And I got the dogs with me, and everything's going fine. And all of a sudden, one of the dogs is barking, and it up at a tree. And about 9-10 foot up in a little fork of a tree, maybe 5-inch fork, is one of the tennis balls stuck in there so tight, I couldn't get it out. I mean, what could have done that? I mean, we're a quarter, half a mile from the house. They were just playing with us. And, you know, it was fun. Can I tell them the one about the stand?
Yeah, please do.
Listen to this one. This is 3 years ago. You know, I got a lot of land. I'm a friendly guy. Go ahead, go hunting. You have a deer, have a beer. I can't eat that. But anyways, this guy goes in. He has a tree stand down about a half a mile in. Every day he goes in at 4 o'clock in the morning. He comes out at 4 afternoon. Every day, Monday through Tuesday. And so he does it. Bomb 4 to 4, 4 to 4. So one day I'm working on the tractor out in the back, and he usually comes out at 4 o'clock. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. He's coming up the hill backwards with the gun at his shoulder, won't even look at me, facing down the hill, walking backwards to his car, and he goes, keep the stand, I'm not going back there again. And he didn't even say goodbye. He just kept his gun up until he got in his car, and he left. The stand is still there. They're filming it right now. And we got some action going on out here. And Tommy, here comes Tommy.
I'll tell you what, guys. Let me tell you. We were out with our new trailer now, ladies and gentlemen. It's like a billboard, a roving billboard, because where we stopped last night here in New Hampshire, a woman comes up and she says, I got to talk to you. Next thing we find out, how far is that place down the road?
2 to 3 miles.
About 2 to 3 miles tops. They're clear-cutting some area, and the guys that came in that were clear-cutting the next day find all these prints that there was, you know, one of these creatures present, okay? She calls this morning, and she says she went back out there this morning, and there's a bunch of prints. Can we please come out? And, of course, we had a full-day schedule of shooting and everything, and it just – I'm going to tell you something, folks. You know, we did the White Mountain Apache Reservations. We had a rigid schedule, you have no idea, from 7 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night, okay? It was grueling, 16 hours a day for 2 days in a row. And then we drove from that to 45 hours to get here. So, you know, do the math. It hasn't been easy for us. But you know what? It's the pure love and the determination, the drive and determination that we all have. When we rolled in yesterday here, I mean, gosh, you know, Scott has been so gracious, you know, and he says, hey, listen, I got plenty of room for you guys, and rightfully so. And then Jimmy says, I'm going to be offended if you don't show up. And we get out to Jimmy's place. Oh, my God. We thought we were in Fort Knox due to the fact of, have any of you guys ever saw Tremors, that little TV show?
Oh, yeah.
There was, you know, they had Tremors 1, 2, and 3. And the guy that was like, he had a house that had every gun and rifle, long gun and side gun, sidearm, and ammunition to start a war. Well, he doesn't have nothing on Jimmy Snell. My God, I got on the phone and called Rocky last night, and he had an ammunition depot in his own friggin' basement. And I'm reading off all the calibers because I didn't even know what they were for. And Rocky was sitting there telling me what they were for. Remember that, Rocky?
Oh, yeah.
And so what do you think Rocky says to me? He says, get somebody to send me the schedule. He says, I'm going to meet you guys on the way.
And I did get the schedule today.
Oh, you did get it? Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
can I tell him another story?
Yeah, hello here. Come on. You got the hours. Hey, listen, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a this is a story from an old girl I met. This is probably, I don't know. I met her down in Boston, and we were just, because I play music, and I met her in the club, and we were just talking, and she happened to believe in Bigfoot. And this is her story, and this is classic. She was camping with her, and she won't talk on the radio, and she's scared because she's got a good, you know, she's got a high-up job. And she says, I wouldn't mention her name. I said, I'll tell the story. She was in the Adirondacks in upstate New York going to New York. She was probably 11. They were camping with her parents. My parents came up to me and said, we're going to be, she thinks they were going to fool around. She said, we're going to be in the tent for about 20 minutes, so go get some sticks and we'll cook the fish later. So go, stay on the path. Just get the sticks and we'll be out in 20 minutes. So she goes, I was walking down the path. You know, this is southern Canada, Alberta, that area. And she goes, coming right at me down the path was a grizzly bear. I mean, a big, big bear. Well, much bigger than the ones we have around here. She goes, I'm dead. She's 12 years old. She goes, I was frozen. I'm standing right there. I'm going to die. And within 15 feet, she goes, the thing stood up like you see in the movies. And it's right there. She goes, I was getting hit with grizzly spit. And I'm saying goodbye to my mom and everything, and I'm done. She goes, all of a sudden, right out of the right-hand side of my eye, this huge, hairy man stepped out of the woods and clocked the bear, punched him right in the nose. And the bear ran away like a scared little rabbit. And she swears this happened to her. Her dad said never to tell anybody the story, but she told me the story. And I believe her. And she goes, I just looked at it. I looked at him. He looked at me. And it was so human, I didn't know what to think. But it just walked into the woods. And that bear just kept running. And I went back and told my parents, and they just said, don't tell that to anybody. But that was it. And here's Tommy again.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, before I forget, okay, so much has been going on. I get a call. We got a call at 4 o'clock this morning from Tommy from Rhode Island, frantic as hell, that the creature over there was back and asked us, can we come right now? Because he was out on his back by the door to the porch, and he was hearing heavy breathing and growling from the creature. And the only way the sentry light goes off on, it's set for something that's 6 feet and above. So anything under that does not make the light go on. And he said, he's practically in tears saying, Tom, can you please have somebody come out here now? He says, I don't know what to do. He says, and I'm not going outside. He said, but I can hear that this thing is growling and grunting. And I said, you sure it's not a bear? He said, no, it's on 2 feet. So, same thing that's happening down there in Alabama. You know, there's action going on down there right now. And I think it's because of this crazy weather, folks. I really do. That the clock, the biological clock of knowing the different temperatures and the different zones are off with these creatures right now. I would have never known that this area here that we're in has the climate that it does. 100 degrees. I mean, it's a big swing. It goes from 100 to 55, okay, in a matter of 5 hours. Where do you see that going on in the summertime? But it's happening, and we're seeing it, okay? And there's people coming up to us here. You know, we're probably going to be here until we leave for Rhode Island to be there on Monday, because we may even have to go sooner. Depends on what happens here, because the action's going on right there in Rhode Island. But it's been crazy, guys, just crazy. But anyhow, tell me what's going on in your world, Rocky.
Well, I talked to the Swede earlier today, and I am going to go tomorrow night or Friday. Oh, I'm going to try to get out And you know where the that big pawpaw patch is? So,
yes.
Okay, I'm going to go check it out. The blackberries right now are just, they're blooming. I mean, they're getting ready. I mean, they're ripe. And so I'm going to go out there and I'm going to check all the old spots. And I'm going to go down in the bottom where Bigfoot Billy was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go check all of that out. I'm just going to do the big drive through and check for any kind of sign or anything. And well, if something hasn't hit the pawpaw patch, I'm gonna bring some of those home with me, and I will pick some blackberries while I'm out there. But I'm actually gonna be doing my duty out there. I'm gonna be looking for tracks or any kind of sign or anything. The pawpaws and the blackberries will just be the payoff if I don't find anything else. But,
well, I hope that we get a chance to see you down the line on the rest of the expeditions that we got scheduled, Rocky.
I looked the schedule over, and I was telling Marco, my wife's, my mother-in-law had a heart attack the other day, and so my wife's down there trying to take care of her, and she's going to be back in the next few days. Her sister's going to be taken over for. Hopefully, I'll be at a point to where I can get loose pretty soon. I'm hoping, because
I'm hoping that we can see you either in Mississippi or in Alabama.
Well, if I can work it, whenever y'all cut over to Kentucky, I'll try and catch up with
you
there.
I forgot all about that, and I'd love to have you there because they got a big giant ceremony. They're inducting us, ladies and gentlemen, to the museum there, and they've got a big press conference scheduled for us. It's supposed to go national, maybe international. I know that we're going to be hitting the front pages of this newspaper here, and then Channel 9's coming out tomorrow to film us. And no telling what we're going to find up there on that clear, where they were clear cutting. It's just been crazy as hell. And as a matter of fact, I've got 38 seconds to get to meet these guys down on the path. If we have
tell Michael Green that I'm tired of him having all the damn fun, and I'm going to be joining up with y'all just as soon as possible.
Oh, I got to tell you guys something else. Michael Green has agreed to do the ghostwriting on Peggy Marks's book, her tell-all book about her and her husband. And so on the tail end of this expedition, we stop in the state of Washington, and we're going to come back down through Northern California. I'm going to spend 3 days with Peggy and him. And then he's going to stay there probably another week, going through all of the material that her and Ivan has accumulated throughout the years, and doing her book, ghostwriting her book. So
I'm waiting for it to come out.
I mean, this is just huge. It's just it's been crazier than hell, but it's everything happening our way. And ladies and gentlemen, remember it's BGFT. That's our ticker symbol. We're over the counter. And they all said it couldn't be done, but we did the impossible. Marco, Bill, thanks again for patching us in, and we'll be more than happy if you give me a couple of more days, and we'll do it every 3 days. We probably can. What I'd like to do is do one in each state that we go to anyway, and share it with everybody. Because it's just been phenomenal, just totally phenomenal. Okay. Rocky, thanks for standing in for us, and Marco. We got to get on the trail now and get down there with those guys. But until next time, America, and good night, Miss Calabash, wherever you are. Bye-bye.
Well, Rocky.
Yes.
What I'd like to do is, if you didn't mind, we could spend a few minutes going over one of your old exploits, you and Sweet.
Well, you know me. I'm always willing to, ready to talk.
Well, you just go right ahead, my buddy.
Well, I think the most important one was just before. Oh, gosh, I can't even remember what year it was. It was my, well, whatever. Me and the Swede had gone to our little heaven on earth out in Johnson County. And we got there early in the morning. We set up our camp, all of that, and jumped on our four-wheelers and rode way on into the night. When we got back, we didn't even bother to eat because we were pretty whooped. So we jumped in bed, and in the middle of the night, I woke up just for a minute. I smelled something that's pretty bad, and I think it was a Swede hitting the toilet or something. But anyhow, the next morning we got up, and Swede was cooking breakfast, and we planned on what we were going to do the next day. I mean, do that day. Anyhow, I was going to get some fruit to take on the trail with us so we'd have something to eat. Well, I had the fruit in a little soft side cooler that I had pulled about 10-12 feet up in the air, up in the tree. I walked around the end of my truck. I have a big tent on my truck. I walked around by the back end of the truck, and my cooler was gone. And the paracord that I had it tied up with, from time to time, and there was a couple of times when we had other people out with us that would get stuck in the creeks and all that. And two turns of that paracord was more than enough to tow them out with. Well, it's supposed to be 500 pounds per strand. But it was broke, and my cooler was gone. And I immediately, you know, the only thing I could think of at the time would have been a bear. And I was throwing a cuss and fit because something took my fruit, my cuties. And anyhow, the Swede was laughing at me. He walked off down the road a little ways to go to the bath, to take the pee. And then he hollered up there at me and told me I needed to come down there and look at something. We got down there, and we found there were six really good footprints. There was three left, three right. I think it was the left foot was missing the big toe. And so we immediately put our tracking hats on, and we started scouring the woods, and we finally, after several hours, we finally found my cooler. And, you know, a bear, anything like that would have, you know, tried to eat it right there, and, you know, they wouldn't have carried the cooler off. But we hit four or five times, we'd hit a spot to where you could actually see partial print. And so we did, in fact, find the cooler. It was tore all to pieces. But anyhow, the fact that it came into the camp, and it was the cooler was hanging not even 8 feet from, about 8 feet from my tent. He walked that close, and, well, we kind of decided that's probably what I was smelling in the middle of the night. But I never heard a sound. The Swede never heard a sound. We had no idea anything had happened until the next morning when we got up and was getting ready to hit the brush again. But we had had other little things happen out there, stuff that we didn't really think amounted to that much until that happened. Whenever we'd go camping, we'd make a water catch all the dew and everything, so we'd be sure and have, you know, extra water in the morning for coffee or whatever. Well, when we first got there, I put about 100 feet of fluorescent orange string line on the hood of the truck, and, you know, we set up camp, and then we went out and did, because, you know, it was still early in the day, and you don't catch any water until during the night when the dew falls. So when we got back from just out messing around, I was getting ready to set up the water catches, and I asked the Swede if what I had done with that string, because it wasn't on the hood. And he said, well, you left it and you put it on the hood of the truck, and I said, well, it's not here. And so I went through the toolbox, and we looked all over for it, never did find it. Well, we just kind of wrote it off as, you know, maybe somebody had actually come through there and just needed it worse than I did. But anyhow, we just wrote it off. We had more, so we weren't hurting for water, anything like that. So we took off the next day, and we got, I don't know, close to a half a mile, I guess, from camp, going down this little trail. And we come around a corner, and there was the string, all the string line, but it was just a big tangled up wad. And it was all there except the little cardboard spool that it was wound up on. We never did find that. And we couldn't imagine why anything would do something like that, you know. It's like some little ornery kid did, you know, did something to play with, and just kept the spool. But we just didn't really pay any attention to it because we didn't. And then after we had footprints in the camp, and that kind of made us start wondering about some of the other weirdness that had happened. We did, down in one area, we found where something had built a fish trap, dammed up the creek, and, you know, there was no big fish in there. I mean, they were like minnows, but it was dammed up on both ends. There was a way in and, you know, no real way out. And there was a great big pile of walnut hulls. And if you throw walnut hulls in the water, it depletes the tannic acid, I guess, depletes the oxygen in the water, and the fish will kind of come up to the top, and all you got to do is just scoop them up. And so, you know, I guess kind of Arkansas sardines. And we found where something had pulled the bark off the side of an old fallen down tree and had taken a deer antler, a shed deer antler, and had been digging in the side of it for grubs and stuff. And then when it got done, it left the antler inside the bark and pushed the bark back up against the tree and popped it up with two sticks. So definitely not something that happens naturally. And, you know, I can't think of any other critter that would do something like that besides a man or something pretty intelligent. And, I mean, we're talking about places that in the first 8 years that we went out there, we saw a total of four people. And they weren't down in deep. They was just along the upper road. We met an old boy out there. We called him Ginseng Mike. He was when we were coming out of the brush, we was in Robert's old Dodge van, and we bottomed out in that one spot, and as we got on up by the road, I told him, we were smelling gas. So when we got up to the road, the Swede pulled over, and there was, we was leaking gas, knocked a hole in the gas tank. And so he was under the van trying to whittle a stob down to where he could drive it up in that hole until we could get somewhere and fix it. And this old boy in his old pickup is about a 68 Ford pickup that was every color that you can imagine. I mean, it was a Frankenstein truck. Old boy stopped and asked if he could help us. And, you know, said, no, I think we've got it. We stood there and talked for a minute, and then he looked at me and said, the Swede crawled out from under the truck and was dusting himself off, and the guy looked at us real funny, and he said, are y'all a couple of damn kooks? And I was thinking to myself, you know, this guy is way too small to be talking that way. And I said, well, you know, I've been called worse, but, you know, normally not to my face. I said, why do you ask that? And he said, well, I see your hat, your T-shirts. Well, my hat and both of our T-shirts said Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated on them. And I said, well, we're part of the Searching for Bigfoot team. And he said, I've got something to show you. So he took us way off down in the woods, and he said that he had walked down this trail, the one that he took us to. So he was walking down that trail one day, and he came around the corner, and there was a Bigfoot just standing there looking at him. Well, we weren't real sure that the guy was stable. But we listened to his story and all that, and we called him Ginseng Mike because we happened to notice in the back of his truck he had about $1,500 worth of ginseng and golden seal, and had morel mushrooms, and anyhow, but that was just a side note. He showed us where he had seen it, and he told us, you know, he said, I've got to get on. And, well, he went on about his business, and me and the Swede walked around there and looked, see what we could find. And we didn't find anything until when we started to go back to the van. I said, well, let's just go ahead and stay on this trail because it circles back around and comes out on the road just about a mile up the way. And we'd walked about 100 yards, and sure enough, there was tracks. There's three of them. One on the, it'd be the east side, one in the middle, and then one going off on the west side down into a deep, deep ravine. And the Swede, he had, there was a turkey feather in the bottom of the one track been stomped down in. He had to have that turkey feather, but I took a picture of that track and sent it in to Tom. And I mean, we have been in that area for years now, and we've seen and heard lots of stuff. Then not all that long ago, Tommy and Doyle, somebody else, I can't remember who else was, Jeremy, they came. I took them out there. Me and Doyle was sitting in camp. Everybody else had gone to bed. Well, Doyle was a retired police detective out of Kentucky. He's used to working the night shift. So he didn't go to bed early, and so I sat up with him. We were sitting there talking, and about 25 yards out of camp, we heard something squall out. Well, I've lived in these woods all my life. That was something I'd never heard before. Well, Doyle looked over at me, all big-eyed, and he said, "Rocky," he said, "what was that?" And I said, "Doyle, I do not know." He said, "I did not want to hear you say that." He said, "I wanted an explanation." And I told him that I didn't have one. Well, we woke Tommy up. Of course, we never heard anything else. The next night it rained. The night after that, me and Doyle and Tommy were all up. The first night it was 8 minutes after 12 when it squalled out. Well, the night that me and Tommy and Doyle were all three up, it was probably about 15 minutes after 12. And it squalled out again. That time it was on the other side of camp and a little bit further away. Fortunately, Tommy recorded it. And, Tommy was recording me and Doyle. We were talking knives and stuff. And anyhow, when it squalled out, he got it. He recorded it. And after we got back, Tommy did the right thing and sent the recording to, I'm thinking it was a university in California, one in Arizona. I don't remember where he said the other one. I think the other one was in Nevada. And anyhow, when again, they were all ignorant of each other, that, you know, that they were checking it. And we got three, when they got in touch with Tommy, they all three had said that it was a primate of some kind. Well, you know, normally we don't have primates in Arkansas. But anyhow, it's then when Tom joined us out there the next go round, we found tracks then, and we talked to Bigfoot Billy that said that there was actually a male, a female, and a juvenile in that area. He had seen the juvenile and the mother. But he said that he had never seen the male, and he wanted to keep it that way. But he had actually been living in a tent out there for over 3 months, and he said that they were kind of frequenting the area. And then he said, "Yeah, let me show you." And this was the first time we'd ever met the guy. He said, "Let me show you." He took us off down a little bit further in the bottoms and across the way. And, he turned over a great big piece of tree bark, and there was one large footprint. And then he walked on up the way about another 20 yards or so and turned over another piece of tree bark, and there was another footprint. Well, he said that those were the best ones, and so he had covered them up with the tree bark to keep them from getting washed away if possible. And so our little area, we were, when we were out there, we weren't alone. We just didn't know, that our neighbor was that close. And anyhow, Mansweet's been out a few times since then, but with everything that's been going on, my business, his business, the fact that he just got done moving and I'm trying to get my house ready to sell so we can build another house a little further out of city limits, you know, we've just kind of, we haven't been able to stay up on everything. And I was, like I was telling Tom, I'm planning on going in the next couple of days and check out the pawpaw patch and the bigger blackberry patches and see if I can find the blackberry patches. I know I'll see bear tracks and hog tracks. The pawpaw patch, you know, they got some pretty good sized trees, and the last time we checked it, you could tell that something had been bending the trees over and picking the fruit off of them. Bear had break the limbs down, but these weren't broke down, just all the fruit was gone off of it. So hopefully, like I say, if I don't see anything else, I'll find me a big bunch of pawpaws and blackberries, and I'll sit back and eat those and grin at myself. But but I'm hoping that Sweet can get loose and go with me. But you know, our lives have been kind of hectic lately.
Yeah, I know it's been pretty hectic in the last couple of months here for you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everything works out for you, Rocky.
We're gonna keep trying, but my main thing is just getting with the boys before they hang it up this go round. I want to get with Tom if this is gonna be his last trip.
Yeah. Well, I hope you make it out there.
Well, I'll get with them somewhere along the line.
I know you will.
Well, it's one of those things. Sometimes we have scheduling problems, but usually I eventually get out there, with them.
I want to thank you for coming on tonight and sharing with us. And you're Mr. Dependable.
Well, I try.
Well, you do very well. Thank you very much, Rocky.
Well,
it's time now to start closing the show down. But I want to thank you and tell everybody out there that we're going to keep you tuned in. We're going to keep everybody tuned in to the expedition here. There'll be some things. We're going to do a little more than once a week. I think we'll probably end up doing some, like Tom was asking, that maybe we'll go through each town we go through. We'll record about a half an hour session, and then we'll put it together. So,
oh, that would be good.
But
that
I
want to
wish everybody out there, keep Bigfooting and keep the Bigfoot live. And we'll see everybody next week. And
good night.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legend, tales, and facts. Put them all together.